Hi, I'm Ali Luke, and this is the August seminar for Writers Huddle, Building Your Author Platform Online. Something I get asked quite often by writers is what an author platform actually is. And it's really your ability to reach people. So you could think of your platform a bit like being able to stand on a stage and speak to an audience and, you know, tell those people about your book or whatever writing you're doing and have the attention of those people, especially. And an author platform isn't just something that you need to consider if you're planning to perhaps be a novelist or write a book or something like that, where you're going to be approaching publishers, though that is important. It's also a way that you can build your writing business, or you can establish a fan base if you're going to self-publish, and so on. So really, whatever position you're in as a writer, whatever your interests are, you know, assuming that you're writing for an audience rather than purely for yourself and for your own pleasure, then it's important to get to grips with what's happening online and how you can be involved and how you can perhaps stand out from the crowd a bit and get some attention through some of the really great tools that we've now got. For me, there are three key situations where you're looking at building your author platform then. The first, and perhaps the most obvious, is when you're seeking a traditional publisher who will want evidence of your platform. And most publishers now are looking for this. When I've done book proposals or looked at friends' book proposals, author platform is something that they want to know. They ask about, you know, maybe if you've got a blog or a mailing list, or what sort of contacts you've got in the industry and so on. And publishers are increasingly turning down good books because the authors simply don't have the platform and the reach to promote those books. And, you know, in an ideal world, we'd have the publisher doing all the promotion and marketing and we could just get on with the writing. But it's never been that way in the publishing industry, and it's certainly not going to go any more that way in the future. Publishers are looking for authors who can market themselves, as well as authors who can write great books. So if you're not going for traditional publication, if you're planning to, say, self-publish your book on Amazon or through Splashwords and so on, then you might feel that you don't really need a platform. You know, after all, Amazon is kind of going to give you a bit of a platform where, you know, your book will be up there with all the others and people can find it and so on. But to get the ball rolling with sales, you really need people who you can market to, people who you can tell about your book, and particularly as your career develops as a writer and you hopefully produce more books, you want to get fans of your first book onto a mailing list or onto your blog or your Facebook or your Twitter so that they can stay in touch, and so that when you release a second book, you can let those people know. So platform is really important if you're self-publishing, because you do have to go it alone. And even once your book's on Amazon or Smashwords or in any of the major online stores, it's not going to just sell kind of by chance. You know, there's a very small chance that somebody will type in a particular search term and find your book. But in the majority of cases, the people who buy it initially will be people who already know you. And then the third situation, which I know at least some huddlers are in, is if you're building a writing-related business. So you're perhaps a copywriter, or you're an editor, or a proofreader, or you're somebody who works with words in a service kind of way. So you charge people by the hour, say, and you produce a piece of writing for them, or you do some editing for them. And obviously, in this case, you're going to need clients. And one of the best ways to bring clients in is by having a strong online presence. So you might have a blog that people tend to come to and read, and then those people can see that you offer writing services and they might hire you. Or you might have a really big Twitter following, so that if one of your friends on Twitter sees somebody looking for a writer or an editor, they can easily point that person to you, and so on. So, like I said at the start, whatever position you're in as a writer, whatever kind of writing you're doing, it's important to just kind of start getting to grips with the idea of a platform. Even if you're at a very early stage of your writing, it's never too early to start building your platform, or at least exploring some of the technologies that I'll be speaking about. So, there's three key ways that I see, you can build a platform online. Of course, you don't just have to do platform building online. There's nothing stopping you going out and about in the world, making connections face to face, perhaps going to conferences or even speaking at conferences. And that is also a perfectly valid sort of author platform. And certainly it's something that I will mention to publishers, is that I've spoken at industry conferences like Blogworld. But I know that for many writers, me included, it can be quite scary to go out there and to kind of have to meet lots of people face to face and, you know, to maybe give out business cards or kind of tell people what we do and so on. And for a lot of us, we're probably most comfortable in front of our computer screen or in front of our notebook, where we can craft our words carefully. We don't feel put on the spot and we don't feel too shy about talking to people. And this is why I think the online world is such a fantastic place for writers. And it's why you'll find writers very well represented in blogging and in social media and so on. Because, you know, we've got a natural advantage here. Text is still the primary form of content online because it's easy for search engines as well as readers to get to grips with. And we are very good at producing text. We write well and fluently, which many people don't, and we can create a really good impression through our words. So there are three key ways you can start building a platform online, and they are using a blog, using a mailing list, or using social media. So social media is sites like Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and so on. And it's up to you which of these you choose. You can certainly do all three. I do all three, and that's been working out very well for me. But when I started out, I focused just on blogging, and there'll be lots of other people who will perhaps focus more on social media or focus primarily on a mailing list. What I would recommend is that you don't just build your platform on Twitter or Facebook or a social networking site, because you are then a little bit at the mercy of that particular site. If their policies change, or if there's a complaint against you, or if that site goes under for some reason, you know, there could be all sorts of potential catastrophes waiting to happen, where your Twitter account could be wiped out and you could lose all your followers. Obviously, you know, we certainly hope that's not a likely thing to happen. Most of the big social media, social networking sites seem pretty solid and stable at this point, but you do have to be aware that you're kind of building a platform on somebody else's land if you choose to concentrate solely on those sites, which is why it's a very good idea to also have a blog or even a fairly static website that you only update occasionally, which you can point people to, because that's your own space, it's your own ground, and you can do whatever you want there. So let's talk a little bit about blogs, because I think blogging is a really good way for authors to start not only building up an online platform, but also getting into a good habit of writing on a regular basis, gaining more visibility, gaining search engine traffic, all sorts of benefits that can bring to you. So what I recommend to anybody starting in blogging is to use WordPress. And there are two flavours of WordPress. There's WordPress.com, which will host your blog for you and give you a domain name for free, and you'll have WordPress in that domain. So if I did that for my blog, I would probably be alliventures.wordpress.com. Or you can use WordPress.org, which allows you to install WordPress on your web server and host the blog yourself, and then you can get your own domain name and so on. And it is possible to get your own domain through WordPress.com. It's up to you which you go for. If you're perhaps not too comfortable with the technology, then you'll want to go with WordPress.com. If you already have a website and web hosting, or you like to do your own thing with technology, you like to have maximum control over it, then self-hosted WordPress from WordPress.org will probably be right for you. And if you do want to know a little bit more about WordPress, please feel free to email me or start a topic in the forums. There's also a mini course in the Huddle on using WordPress.com, which will take you through all the basics of just getting your blog set up. And there are some little videos and things there, just so you can see what to type in and what to expect on the screen and so on. And actually, it's really quite a simple and straightforward process nowadays. Blogging has come on a long way in the last few years, and lots of people who don't consider themselves technical at all are using blogs very happily. So even if it's something that sounds a bit kind of geeky or complex to you, don't be afraid to give it a try. And there's lots of great tutorials and people who can help you if you do get stuck. So, assuming that you have got a blog set up, one of the big questions that people have is what to blog about. And this is a particular issue for writers because it might seem obvious to either blog about the craft of writing or to blog about perhaps your own writing in progress, but that's only going to work if you're writing for an audience of writers. So if, for instance, you offer editing services, it might be very appropriate for you to have a blog where you give people some basic tips on editing, on how to do it themselves, and then you say to them at the end of each post or the end of some of the posts, if you'd like me to help you with your editing, then you know, click here, contact me. I blog about writing on Ali Ventures because my business focuses on writers. Obviously, the Writers Huddle is a community for writers, and all the services that I offer and the ebooks that I've written more recently certainly have been aimed squarely at writers. So that makes sense for me. Of course, it might not make sense for you. It might be the case that what you want to write is, say, a novel, and obviously some of the people who read novels are fellow writers, but many of them, probably the majority, are people who just enjoy reading. They don't necessarily have the desire to write a novel. They might have some interest in the writing process, but they won't want article after article with, you know, really detailed tips on writing dialogue or crafting a scene or plotting a novel and so on. So if you're writing fiction, the approach that most authors take is to blog about topics that are related to the book. So something that's maybe tied into themes in the book. If you're writing maybe a thriller novel set in lots of exotic locations, you could write about those places, for instance. If you're writing maybe a mystery novel that, you know, delves into some particular secret of the past, you might write about that period of history. And, you know, obviously it's up to you. Other people who do fiction will maybe have a blog that's slightly more tied into the world of their novel. So they might post interviews with their characters, or they might post little short stories or flash fiction or something that's set in that fictional world of the novel itself. And this, you know, depends a bit on your genre, depends on what sort of fans you're hoping to attract and so on. And it can certainly take time to build up a following for fiction. Then if you're thinking of writing a non-fiction book, or even writing, you know, non-fiction articles for journals or magazines and building up your expertise in that area, then blogging is a really great way to move forwards, because you can obviously pick any topic you want and write about not only what you already know in that topic, but also what you're learning or great posts or books that you've read recently. So, you know, if you want to write about, say, cookery, then you could have a blog about cooking. If you want to write about gardening, you can blog about gardens and so on. Obviously, it may be the case that you want to write about several different topics, and in that situation, you will need to decide what the focus of your blog is going to be. You might be able to combine two related topics in your blog, but you're going to struggle to blog about three or four very diverse areas. And then the final option for blogging, which was perhaps much more common in the earlier days of blogs, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, say, is to have a journal-style blog. So rather than perhaps writing about a specific topic like cookery or gardening, or writing purely about your book, you write more about your daily life. So, you know, you write about interesting things that have happened to you or just what's going on with you and so on. And that can work. There are still blogs like that which are popular and which do well. But I think this is a hard thing to pull off, because you need to be naturally entertaining. You need to have the sort of content that people want to come back to and read, a bit like a newspaper columnist might be a good way to think of this. And you really need to have a strong writing style. With other sorts of blogs, you can draw people in just on the basis of your information, you know, of having really interesting or engaging or useful content for them. If it's purely about your own life or your family or, you know, what you've been doing in the day, then there needs to be something in your writing that grips people in that way. And I think if you are going for a journal-style blog, then a good way to do that is to try and have a particular focus for it. So, for instance, you might focus on parenting if you've got small children, or you might focus on your love of food if, you know, that's something for you. So you don't necessarily have to blog sort of, you know, recipes or cookery tips every day, but you could kind of at least have a food theme running through your blog, you know, maybe blog about the places you go and eat out or something. So obviously it is up to you what you choose to do with your blog. And certainly over my time in blogging, over the past 4 or 5 years, I have shifted between different topics. In the case of Ali Ventures, I've shifted the blog from being primarily about sort of personal development, life, things like that, to being primarily about writing. And blogs are a nice fluid sort of form. You know, if you decide that you've maybe changed your mind about what you want to write about, you can change the direction of your blog, assuming that you didn't give it a name that is so tied to your original topic. If you do have perhaps a blog name that's really focused on your original topic and you want to move on, then you can create a new blog. And obviously it's nice if you can kind of start off as you mean to go on. But even if you're feeling a bit unsure at the moment of where to begin, or you've got several possible directions in mind, my advice is just to kind of jump in and make a start and begin to build up an audience and begin to get some experience with blogging and kind of get comfortable with it. And of course we all make mistakes, and of course we all change our minds at times, but it's much better to be kind of doing something and making those mistakes and learning from them than to be just sitting back and kind of thinking, oh, it's not the right time to start, or I don't know what to blog about yet. Because you may find that you just need to kind of get into it and start doing things before you perhaps find your voice and find your topics as a blogger. Then something else related to blogging, which I think is particularly important for building a platform, is to write posts for other blogs. Now, in most cases, you won't get paid for this. There are certainly some blogs that will pay for content, but they may not give you some of the same benefits that guest posting, which is typically for free, will give you. So when you do a guest post, you write a blog post and you give it to a blog which is, you know, on your topic, and hopefully their readers will enjoy that post. At the end of the post, you'll get to put a short bio, which is just, you know, a description of who you are and what you do, and a link back to your own website, or maybe a link to your book on Amazon, or whatever you want that to be. And this is a really good way to build up relationships with other bloggers in your field, particularly kind of quite big name bloggers who might not really notice you just from you commenting on their blog or you retweeting them on Twitter or something. It certainly worked very well for me to have some of those relationships and to get to kind of know some of the bigger people in the writing blogging world and the blogging world. And it's also a really nice way to get your work in front of a bigger audience when you're starting out. And, you know, if your own blog only gets kind of 2 or 3 comments or no comments on a post, and you post on a big site and you get 50 comments, then that can be really, really encouraging, and it can make you feel that it's definitely worth continuing with what you're doing. And obviously guest posting can also help you to bring in new readers to your site. So I know that whenever I write a guest post and link back to Ali Ventures or to a post on Ali Ventures, then I will get more readers, my subscribers will go up. Quite often nowadays I have a newsletter, I will link back to the newsletter page and I'll get new subscribers to the newsletter. And it, you know, it's a very clear and very obvious effect. The other benefit of guest posting is that from Google's perspective, it's a link to your site from a big site which has lots of authority in the eyes of Google. So it can be quite hard to get big blogs to link to your posts generally. You know, there's a bit of luck involved in things like that. But if you write a guest post, you will get a link back to your site. You can choose the text that you want that link to have generally, which means you can use useful keywords. So for instance, if I linked to Ali Ventures, I might say Ali Luke writes about writing and link writing to Ali Ventures, rather than just linking the word Ali Ventures, because most people online aren't searching for Ali Ventures, they're searching for writing, and the people who are searching for Ali Ventures are probably people who already know about my blog. And if you do have some strong guest post links within your field, it's definitely worth mentioning that as part of your author platform if you approach publishers. Or even if you're, you know, hoping to speak at a conference in the industry and so on. Because those bigger sites, there's name recognition, and it just shows that there's a quality to your writing if you've been accepted on those sites. So blogging in general is a really, really big topic. I've been learning about blogging since I started back at the very end of 2007, and I know that I still have more to learn. I've also written an awful lot about blogging over the years. And from probably October this year, I haven't finalised the timing, I'm going to be starting my Blog On e-course as a course within the Writer's Huddle. So if you want to learn more about blogging, it will be about a 9-week course. It will be included in your Huddle membership, so there's nothing extra to pay or anything like that. And you can join in, hopefully, along with some other huddlers, get maybe some feedback from them on your blog posts. And Blog On is a course that just takes you through the process of writing posts and writing pages for your blog. So if you want, you know, if you want to know a bit more about blogging, keep an eye out for that in October. And in the meantime, take a look at the WordPress mini course within the Huddle, and maybe just get your blog set up and maybe try out a few posts, just kind of get to grips a little bit with the technology, and then you'll be in a really good position to start the Blog On course when that gets going. So the next possibility for building your online platform is to have a mailing list. And this is an extremely valuable way of establishing a platform, because you will have people's email addresses, and that means you can directly contact those people when, say, you know, you've got a book out, or you're offering a new writing service, or whatever it might be. And those people have given you permission to email them, which is really important, because if you just start emailing people kind of, maybe not quite at random, but you know, you just pick email addresses off the internet of writers and kind of email them all, then you may get into trouble for spamming. Although people can subscribe to a blog by email, many of them won't. They may just read your blog on the web, or they may subscribe by RSS, and then you won't have their email addresses and you won't have any way to contact them. And obviously you hope they'll read every blog post, but they may not necessarily remember to return to the blog, or they may not read all their feeds in Google Reader or whatever it might be. So it's definitely a good idea to at least think about a mailing list from the quite early days. Most people begin with a blog because it's perhaps a little bit easier to just get started with, and then they maybe add a mailing list once they're feeling comfortable with the blog. And of course, you can have a mailing list and no blog at all. You could just have perhaps a web page online where people go and sign up for your mailing list, and you could promote the mailing list in the back of your books, or when you do guest posts or whatever you want. That is a possibility. For me, it works well to have the blog for longer articles and to kind of draw people in initially. Then I have my mailing list for short, regular articles and special promotions and so on. So something to be aware of here is that you can't just build a mailing list within your own email account. So let's say you use Gmail. You can't go into your Gmail inbox and put in, you know, the addresses of 100 people who've signed up for your list into the BCC field and then email them all your newsletter. Although that might be technically possible, it's not a good way to do things, because it means that you have to do quite a lot of list management where you're constantly adding in new names or taking off names if people want to unsubscribe from the list. And in many cases, you may not even be able to email that many people through your email provider. So you may not be able to email more than, say, 100 people an hour, which is the case with my email provided through Dreamhost, without your web host or your email host thinking that you're attempting to spam people. So it's much better to go with a professional, dedicated mailing list service that can send the emails for you, and that will not only increase the chance of your email actually reaching people, getting into their inbox, not getting filtered out as spam, it will also provide you with some very useful tools. So for instance, you can see how many people opened your email at a glance. You can see which people opened your email. You can see if somebody hasn't opened your emails for, you know, 2 months or something. And the service that I use for this is AWeber. And I'll pop a link to that in the notes for this seminar. And AWeber costs $19 a month at the most basic level. And it's, for me, I found it very easy to use. I found it intuitive, and I like the different sort of reports and the ability to track things that it gives me. Another really good option is MailChimp. That is free to use at the basic level, and it's perhaps a slightly more kind of quirky service than AWeber. They've got a little chimp monkey thing, and you know, the way it's designed, for some people it's kind of more fun and more user-friendly. For other people, they prefer the AWeber interface. So you may even want to try both of them out. I think AWeber currently has a trial period where you can get a month for $1, so you can just test out the service and see what you think of it. And whether you decide to go with AWeber or MailChimp or a different emailing service altogether, it's important to think about what you'll be providing to your mailing list and what you can offer people to encourage them to sign up. So when people sign up for my newsletter at AliVentures, they get access to a mini library of ebooks where they've got sort of free content that's exclusive to the newsletter list, just short kind of to the point ebooks in PDF form that they can download and use. And then every week I send a short email with an article about writing or something related to writing, maybe a little bit of personal news of what's going on with me, because you know, I like to build up a rapport with those people. And occasionally I'll send an email to the mailing list which is perhaps more promotional. So, you know, if I reopen the Writer's Huddle, for instance, then I let the mailing list know so that people can join up. If I've got a new ebook out, I'll let the mailing list know and they get a discount code for that. So it's good to just think up front what you might be using the mailing list for, roughly how often you're going to want to email people, so you can let them know that before they sign up. Because if somebody joins your list expecting to perhaps, you know, receive an update once a month and you email them every day, they're going to unsubscribe quite quickly. And it's absolutely up to you how often you email people. I would say if you're emailing less than once a month, they might just forget who you are, why they joined the list, and they might unsubscribe because they kind of think it's spam and they don't remember why they wanted to be on that list in the first place. If you email kind of more than every few days, that may well be too much for people. And you can ask your audience what they prefer. I used to do a newsletter maybe every 2 or 3 weeks. It was a little bit sporadic. And then I asked the newsletter readers, what would you like to see in the newsletter? And one of the questions I asked was how often they'd want to receive it. And to my surprise, by far the most popular option was weekly. So I kind of thought that people would prefer, you know, not too often, not as much as weekly, because they might be overwhelmed with emails. But no, they wanted weekly emails. So after that, it was easy for me to kind of commit to doing a newsletter every Wednesday. And, you know, with a very few exceptions, the newsletter has now always gone out weekly. But like I say, it may be that you or your audience want a slightly different frequency. So it could be that you find that for you, you know, committing to once a month is as much as you want to email your list. Or for your audience, they've perhaps signed up primarily just for updates on, you know, when your next novel is out or something. And they don't really need an email every week telling them that, you know, you've written another half a chapter or something. So then in that case, you may just want to email them once in a while to kind of let them know things are progressing with the book, to maybe tell them that there's a new short story or some other little treat on your website for them, and just to kind of keep them engaged with you and help them to remember that, you know, you exist and your next novel is going to be coming out. Then the final key aspect to an online platform is social media. So this is websites like Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn or Google+, where people create an account and they can interact with one another. Obviously, you'll get some level of interaction on your blog through comments and some interaction perhaps with your email list, because they might hit reply and let you know what they thought of a particular email. But social media is probably the easiest way to kind of connect to people where they are in an environment that they are comfortable with. And I would recommend that you focus on one or two networks. So rather than trying to spread yourself too thin across every single social network that seems to be popular, concentrate on one or two where it seems like your audience are likely to gather. So for me, my networks are Twitter and Facebook primarily. Twitter is the one I probably focus on the most because there are a lot of writers on Twitter and I have quite a strong Twitter following. Facebook I've started with more recently, but I'm definitely building up a following there as well. And that's something that I perhaps intend to put a little bit more time into now that my Twitter account is well established. So it's really up to you which networks you choose to focus on. It will depend a bit on who you are. So maybe if you're already a really keen Facebook user, you want to focus on Facebook. It will depend a bit on who your audience is. So although Facebook is by far the biggest of the social media sites, it may be the case that actually your particular audience are more likely to gather on Twitter, or they're more likely to be on LinkedIn or on Google+. So you may need to kind of, you know, have a look around those sites, see what the demographics are. You may want to run a survey on your blog, if you have a blog, to ask which social networks people use. Whatever social media network you do decide to go with, it's going to require a regular investment of time, which is why I recommend focusing on just one or two rather than trying to do too much. It's hard to build up much traction on social media if, you know, you only log in every couple of weeks or something. So ideally, you probably want to be logging into Twitter or Facebook pretty much every day, you know, just to leave an update or two or to interact with other people there. So I'm not suggesting you spend your whole time kind of on those networks. It might be just 5 or 10 minutes a day, or it might be that, you know, you kind of check Twitter in coffee breaks or something, because certainly they can become a distraction from writing. Then some of the reasons to use social network, beyond just kind of reaching an audience, you know, building up a fan base and so on, is that it's a great way to network with peers. So for instance, on Twitter, it's easy for me to kind of be in touch with some other writers, some of the people who I kind of work alongside, maybe, you know, in partnerships or as a colleague, or people who I just want to share some tips and ideas and advice with. And, you know, some of those people maybe have kind of more followers than me. Some of them maybe they're, you know, not quite so established in the writing world, but it's an easy way for us all to interact together. And in the kind of early days of using Twitter or Facebook or other social media sites, it might seem like not much is happening. You're perhaps talking into a bit of a vacuum. You know, you don't have many followers on Twitter or many fans on Facebook, and there's maybe not much interaction going on. You know, just like if you've started a blog, probably in the first early days you didn't get many comments and so on. So it's definitely worth kind of persevering and keeping on putting some time into it. And you will see things growing and kind of increasing. You'll get more followers, there'll be more interaction and so on. So if you're on Twitter in particular, a good way to do this is perhaps to look for some Twitter chats related to writing. So you'll find that there are kind of regular talks and discussions on Twitter using hashtags where people all gather at a particular time and they talk about, you know, what some aspect of writing, maybe it's self-publishing, maybe it's editing and so on. And they'll use a particular hashtag, which is a word with a hash symbol, or if you're American, a pound symbol before it, so that other people can all follow that one conversation. And Twitter chats can become kind of very fast and a little bit overwhelming. So you might find that you don't like those so much, but another way to find writers and to find people who you might want to connect with is to simply search on Twitter. So search for the word writing, or the word self-publishing, or the word publishing, or whatever aspect of writing you might be particularly interested in. And you will find people who are other writers. And you can choose to follow them, and they may follow you back, and you can interact with them by sending them a message and so on. So in general, when using social media, something that people kind of wonder is what on earth to say, you know, what to talk about, especially perhaps when you've got quite a limited space on Twitter or even on Facebook, where you have a bit more to play with in terms of how much you can write, but, you know, people have a short attention span. So something that you can do, which is very simple, is just to tweet or to post on Facebook about what you're currently reading. So that could be a link to a great blog post, or it could be a mention of a book that you're really enjoying. And a great tip here is if the author of the blog post or the author of the book is on Twitter, include them in your tweet. So you could say, you know, I'm reading a great blog post by @AliVentures. And then, as well as the people who follow you seeing that tweet, I will see that tweet, and I will see that you're reading a blog post by me and that you've been kind enough to tweet about it. And there's a good chance that I'll send you a reply and sort of say thanks for tweeting, or glad you enjoyed the post, or something like that. So this is quite a good way to maybe just very casually get on someone's radar. And it's a really good way to give some value to the people who follow you, who might otherwise not have found a great blog post or a book or some other resource that you're recommending. Then, of course, something related to this is you can share links to your own blog posts or to your own book or whatever it might be. And I think that's a sensible and valuable thing to do, but you perhaps just need to do it in a little bit of moderation, especially when you're first starting out on sites like Twitter and Facebook. Because if every single message you post is, you know, buy my book, it's great, here's the link, or read my blog post, it's here, then people may feel that, you know, you're just there to kind of promote yourself. You're not really there to ever engage in a conversation or to perhaps help out another writer by promoting their material, and so on. So by all means use Twitter and Facebook and other sites to link to your blog posts, because some people will perhaps follow you on Twitter but not subscribe to your blog, for instance. But just be aware of the balance between perhaps how often you tweet something that's very self-promotional versus how often you know, maybe reply to another person on Twitter, or, you know, tweet something just kind of funny about your own life, or tweet a link to somebody else's post, and so on. And obviously, you know, the same goes for sites other than just Twitter. Many of them work in a similar way. Then something else valuable you can do with updates is to ask questions. So rather than perhaps, you know, running a whole survey of your blog readers, if there's a particular question you're interested in getting opinions on, you could just ask it on Twitter, or you can post it on Facebook. On Facebook, you can even create a poll where people can vote on different options. So, for instance, you could ask, you know, what ebook would you like to see me write next, and give people 3 or 4 options. Or you can even ask something that's kind of just for fun, like, you know, who's your favourite character in my novel, and give them the names of the characters. And sometimes that can be kind of quite illuminating as well. So questions are a great way to try and get some interaction going, because we all kind of naturally will respond to questions, whereas if all your tweets are just sort of statements or kind of updates about your life, people may not be sure quite, you know, what's best to reply, or they may not think of giving you a reply. And then something you can certainly do, if it's kind of appropriate for the platform that you're building, is to share how your writing is going. So obviously, you know, you may not want to kind of constantly talk about your word count, or, you know, the problems you're having with your novel scene or whatever it might be. But certainly people will be interested in how you're progressing. Other writers will probably be happy to kind of support and encourage you. Your readers may just be interested in knowing that you're kind of working on the next book. And that can be quite encouraging for you personally. And it can also be a good way to just connect with writers and with readers. And, you know, again, I'd say don't perhaps overdo this. You know, if every single tweet or every Facebook update is a kind of word count, that can get a little bit tedious for the people who are following you. So for a great example of how to use social media and indeed blogging and mailing lists very well, Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen has done amazing work in building herself a very strong online platform. She's got a blog, The Creative Pen. She also has newsletter that kind of goes out sort of every so often, and she's got a lot of followers on Twitter. She's got a really strong Twitter account, and if you follow Jo on Twitter, you'll see that she is really good at finding great resources and tweeting about them, and that makes her look like a nice person, and it makes her look like somebody who's helpful and who wants to support other writers, and also it makes her look like someone who really has her finger on the pulse of what's happening in the writing and blogging world. And in fact, you know, Jo is someone who really kind of is at the cutting edge of what's going on in writing, and particularly in self-publishing and indie publishing right now. So definitely I would recommend you follow Joanna Penn on Twitter. She's at The Creative Penn on there, and just see what she does and see perhaps what tips you could pick up from her. So in general, do take some time to look into blogs or mailing lists or social media or even all three, and think about what you might want to start putting in place. You know, perhaps this week, perhaps this month, where could you begin to build a platform online? Or if you already have a blog or a mailing list or a great presence on Facebook or on Twitter and so on, then maybe think about ways you could build on that, or ways you could just add another level to your platform to give you a further reach or to give you a new audience. Because this is something that is only going to become more important for us writers. The digital world is not going to go away at this point. You know, just as ebooks have really taken off in the last three years or so, a strong online presence is becoming more and more and more important in the writing world. And sometimes it can seem like just another thing to do, you know, another distraction perhaps from the actual writing. But I think the great thing is it's really encouraging to have people reading your blog posts or replying to your tweets or telling you how much they loved your novel and how they're waiting for the next one. And sometimes as a writer, it can feel very isolating to just kind of be on your own in a room typing away, you know, wondering if anyone's ever going to read it or if anyone's ever going to really kind of care about those words that you're putting on the page. And in the online world, through blogs or mailing lists or through social media, you've got a great opportunity to really connect to your audience and to know that they are reading, or to know that they're interested and that they're engaged. And I know for me personally, and I think for a lot of other writers, that can be hugely motivating on days when perhaps the writing isn't going so well. So by all means, pop some questions in the forums if there's anything that I've talked about that perhaps you'd like to see a new seminar on, or if there's something that I've said that you're not quite sure what I meant or what it was about, because I know this can get into quite technical areas. And remember that the Q&A format has changed now, so that if you post a question in the Q&A forum, I will try and reply to that, you know, as promptly as I can, usually within a couple of days, rather than your questions being all kind of bunched up together in a Q&A recording. So you can get, you know, fairly quick response from me there in the forums. And of course, if you post in the writing chat forum, then there'll be, I'm sure, other huddlers who are very happy to share their experiences with building their online platform as well. So the very best of luck with your writing and with your platform building, and I'll hopefully see you around in the forums.